Hello, guys. Welcome back to Daily Devo with Sarah. It's your host, Sarah, and I thank you guys for tuning in and joining me again for our Daily Devo quest of growing in our wisdom as we use a Devo book called God's Wisdom for Navigating Life by Tim and Kathy Keller. I did want to extend an invitation to you guys today before we get started for you to grab your own copy of the book. And here's why. You could be passively listening to my episodes every day, and if that floats your boat, that floats your boat. But then, like, if you're interested in becoming a little bit more engaged and involved through these episodes, then it might be nice for you to have your own copy of the Devo so that every day you can look at with your, you know, own eyes on paper, like the exact verses that are mentioned each day and the input from the authors, the prayer, the question of the day. And then in the margins, as we walk through the Devo together, you can like write down your own questions and comments and anything else that comes to mind. And I think it might be more of a enriching like experience. So, you know, if that's interesting you or in any way, then go for it. Like, there's a link for the Devo book in the bio, so feel free to grab a copy there. Like, it's like $11 or $12, so, you know, that's an opportunity. You don't have to, it's up to you. Okay. And before we get started, one more thing. I did want to revisit the episode from yesterday on generosity. So one of the listeners actually reached out to me and brought up a point that I didn't go too in-depth in. And it is a topic of some Christians feeling reserved, like about giving their money to the church, not because they are stingy, not because they want to hoard their money or whatever. Like, they have good intentions. They want to, you know, be faithful. They want to honor what God says in the Bible about giving and tithing, but they just are not comfortable with how their local churches are spending their money. And I'm not just talking about those mega churches where the pastors are like living in a mansion with his family and, you know, is like Betsy DeVos, like owning like 9 yachts, you know. I'm even talking about your like typical, you know, like a small or a medium-sized church in your local area where you're not comfortable with the way that tithing money, people's tithing monies are allocated. And I think I did like somewhat mention this point when I encourage you guys to pray for your church leaders so that they will use their best wisdom and discernment to make the best financial decisions for the church so that, you know, they can effectively expand the kingdom of God. That's the point, right? But at the same time, I can even tell you with my own anecdotes of people feeling uncomfortable about giving to certain churches. I think not all churches are the best at being transparent about exactly how the money is used. And I always think transparency is the best way to go. Maybe there are some blind spots that I don't see when it comes to churches being too transparent, but I mean, it's money. Like, it's already sensitive to begin with. So yeah, like, it's awesome if your congregants can just like blindly 100% trust you, as in the church leaders, to make the best decisions, blah 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 blah, but you just know that money is a sensitive thing. And I think whether it's in a church context or not, like, everybody wants to know exactly where their money's going. So, you know, just to like not necessarily appease the congregants, but to just keep everything clean and open, like, make your financial data available to the public, you know, and be proactive in like letting that information be known. But anyway, that's a side note. Like, I remember I am thinking of this one church that I used to go to, and I stopped giving to this church at one point because I found out about how people's tithing money was being spent and the categories of these tithing money allocations were not aligned with my values at all when it came to how tithing money is used. So for example, I learned, well, I heard through the grapevine that part of the tithing money, not a huge portion, but still part of it was going towards funding the pastor's kids' college tuition. That messed me up when I heard that because I was a college student at the time myself, and I was like applying to tons of scholarships every summer, every winter, like any chance I got, and using that money to not only provide for my own self, like with the tuition, but also like helping out with the rent back at home for my parents. And then what, like the meager $11 per hour job that I had at the school library was going towards that, like someone else's kids' college tuition. Like that was baffling to me. And maybe like if I were not in the particular situation that I was in, I might not have been so bothered, but you know, that was just how I was emotionally reacting, and it made me lose all motivation to keep giving money to that church. And I'm not saying that this church was corrupt by any means. Like, I had amazing, like, experiences in that church. So I'm not shaming this church by any means. That's really not the point. But, you know, when it comes to this topic of tithing and, like, why I had my reservations continuing to funnel my tithing money there, I mean, that's the story. That's the tea. And I think the reason the church leaders made a decision to allocate some of people's tithing money towards that particular category is, you know, based off of some Old Testament practices. I think it's in the book of Leviticus where out of the 12 tribes of Israel, like the Levites who, you know, took care of like the priestly duties at the time, God didn't want like those people, those leaders to be so concerned with providing for themselves to the point that they got distracted with their spiritual duties of interacting with God and serving the community. So like if they could alleviate some of those like financial, economical issues for that particular group of people, then that's just in the best interest of everyone. So, you know, like if that was like the philosophy or the foundation, through which this decision and money allocation decision was made, then like, all right, you know, like to each their own when it comes to like churches doing their own thing. But I just was not comfortable. So I started actually tithing to another church that I visited a few times back when I was in college. This was like a very, very new small church plan. And, you know, this church was set in like a low income inner city community. And I actually knew personally like some of the peoples on the committee of that church, and I really was able to trust that they were gonna use their best wisdom on spending the money, like quote-unquote correctly. correctly as in like when it comes to spending money on the church, like values, you know. So yeah, honestly, even to this day, like that is where my tithing money goes to. And I don't know, you guys, if this tithing behavior is correct or incorrect. I, to my knowledge, don't know of any specific Bible verse that says I have to give to my local church. And if I am missing that Bible verse, then like, please do let me know. You know, I want to do what God says. So if I just don't have a knowledge of that verse, then please do share it with me. Right now, I feel like I'm not necessarily doing something so overtly wrong by not giving to my local church. I mean, especially because I'm in the process of church hopping right now, so I'm not really like settled and 100% like committed to a church. But either way, this does like spark a thought in me, like, when I do find like a home church to settle in, am I gonna be like this quote unquote anal again about where the money goes or not? So it's an ongoing conversation. I think there's a lot of layers to this. So if you guys have any follow-up input or any feedback, then I absolutely welcome that. Please let me know. Anyway, let's do get started with our Devo for today, which is the topic of learning from adversity. The verses that we're reading off of are Proverbs 3, 11 to 12. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as the father delights in. As a father, the son he delights in. So this is King Solomon, the wisest person who has ever lived on earth, writing to his son. And he is basically telling his son, when the Lord disciplines you, like, don't get salty, like, don't get angry, don't resent it, because God always disciplines you out of love. Like, if he tries to discipline you, it's because he gives a damn about you. Like, you mean something to him, right? Like, if you didn't, God would not bother with you, right? Why would God purposely, like, spend his efforts and energy disciplining you when you don't matter to him at all? So I think that's, you know, it puts like a different spin and a perspective on our Christian journey when we feel like God is being too hard on us. And immediately, I guess this could be somewhat related, and maybe this is going to go off into a tangent. I mean, it probably will. Like, that's literally what happens every episode. But I'm thinking of coddling based on reading these Bible verses. I personally think that coddling is an epidemic in America. Can't speak for other countries, but I can say that for sure in America. And it's just, it sucks. Like, parents being so obsessively coddling of their kids these days. And I think it's amazing that modern day parents are more aware and mindful of, you know, noticing their kids' feelings and thoughts and respecting them and being protective of their kids in the more like emotional department. Because I would say parents from my parents' generation and before that were completely unaware. There was like no education for them on this particular area of parenting, but now it has like swung to the complete like other side of the spectrum, where parents are coddling their kids too much that they forego disciplining of their children, and it's so damaging to child's development. Are they not aware of the detrimental effects? Like, you are robbing a child of his or her many opportunities to learn about the realities of life and what they'll have to face in the future. Like, how in the world are your children going to develop emotional resilience or any dose of that, honestly, if all you do is like get in their way and protect them and like not teach them in the process? You know, like, it's all about just making sure that my kid is never in pain, never sad, never angry. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, you are a literal obstacle to your child experiencing like the full extent of human emotions and the kind of experiences that the child is going to grow up to face in life, you know, hardships included. And I don't know, like, kids, parents just don't want to like hurt their kids' feelings, and they want to be like buddies with their children. I don't know, I think it's gross. Like, how are your children supposed to like respect you or like make you ever feel a sense of authority when you want to be their best friends and you just want to, like, you know, whatever. That's just my tangent. I told you we're going to go off into tangent. But yeah, like, I think these two verses are really eye-opening for us, because it is almost like assuming that we have this natural tendency to despise the Lord's discipline. And I think that makes total sense, because disciplining, I think, can naturally make you feel kind of bad about yourself because you did something wrong, or like your behavior was incorrect or your speech was incorrect. And, you know, disciplining happens because you're not doing something right, and like, nobody wants to feel like they're not doing something right. I know, at least like me, with the kind of ego that I do have sometimes, like, I do feel that way when I feel like, whether it's God or it's like my biological parents trying to discipline me, like, I immediately put up this wall with certain things because I'm like, I'm trying to protect myself here. So it's like I coddle myself. I coddle myself almost. But in no way am I going to coddle my children. That I do know for my future mother self. And like Solomon tells his son, like, do not resent God's rebuke. So rebuke is a little bit more like reprimandy, whatever. But I love the next part where it says, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, right? Like, it's basically saying, like, hey, the reason why you shouldn't, like, get so salty when God tries to teach you something is because it means that he cares about you, right? Like, if you were irrelevant to him, then he would just leave you alone. He would just let you run in your sin. And you know what? God does allow people to do that and just, like, go off into their path when they resist him too much, because he wants to teach them in that kind of way by releasing them to their freedom. And then when they experience, like, the world and they realize that they can't find contentment, they're going to come back anyway. So anyway, yeah, like, I love that part because I do feel like I get disciplined by God sometimes. And, you know, I could share some stories with that later, but I could naturally develop this resentment and bitterness towards God. Like, God, why are you being so hard on me? You know? But then he disciplines me because he likes me. He loves me and he cares about me and he wants me to grow up, like, as an emotionally and spiritually mature person. And so I'm motivated, you know, reading that to appreciate when I feel like God is trying to discipline me, right? And that's what good parents do. I know that as much of a rough relationship I have, you know, with my dad, I know that he disciplined me because he always wanted the best for me. He knew about the kind of challenges I would face in the future, and he wanted to make sure that, like, I was gonna be prepared for that. So he had to teach me, like, Sarah, that behavior is not correct. Like, those, using those words are not correct, because if you were to implement those words and, like, behaviors in the future, that's not gonna go well for you. So, you know, I appreciate my dad for disciplining me growing up as well, although I do remember, like, is dad disciplining me because he wants to, or because he's, like, pissed off at something right now and, like, he's projecting? But anyway, yeah. It says, the fifth mark and means of wisdom has to do with adversity and trouble in life. Often, a generous heart and life can lead to increasing financial prosperity. And again, like the same note I made yesterday, that whole line sounds like the prosperity gospel, but at the same time, you know, I was thinking about this topic of prosperity gospel after I mentioned it yesterday with some other line we read from yesterday's Devo. But maybe, like, when we see lines like this, right, which is off the Bible verse, often a generous heart and life can lead to increasing financial prosperity, maybe that's not meant to, like, motivate us to honor God and, you know, do certain behaviors so that we can get richer or live a better life. But maybe it's just, like, a mere explanation of how the heavenly system works, as in, like, God notices and rewards people who obey. And, you know, like, in a worldly context with anything else, like, we wouldn't see that as anything negative. We would just see God, like, being observant and noticing our efforts and rewarding us accordingly. But I think it's just, you know, we're always on edge, us Christians, like, who've been a Christian for a while, like, we get on edge about anything that sounds remotely close to the prosperity gospel because we've seen it abused so badly. And so we are a little bit more, like, hypervigilant about this topic. But maybe, like, when we read Bible verses like that, like, as long as we don't have any motivation to abuse this heavenly system and just acknowledge it as, oh, like, this is how God just functions. Like, just like how he will rebuke and discipline when some, you know, people are not, like, following his ways, like, he rewards when people do follow his way. I mean, it just seems to make sense, you know. Maybe it doesn't have to be such, like, a negative thing, you know. But anyway, but verses 11 to 12 shows this is by no means an absolute rule. The world is riddled with evils, mysteries, and troubles beyond human grasping and fixing. Absolutely. Like, think about the story of Joseph from the Bible. Think about the story of Job, right? God loved Job and Joseph, but what kind of hell did they go through, right? Like, hell on earth, literally. The mark of wisdom is to be ready for suffering. And I guess that's the mentality of survival. So I don't really like it. Like, that line just rubs me the wrong way, you guys. The mark of wisdom is to be ready for suffering. Is it just me? Because, I mean, the way I've been trying to, like, reorient my life, or at least the way I think about life, is like, I want to live to thrive, not to survive. And I don't know, when I read lines like that where it says like the mark of wisdom is to be ready for suffering, it's kind of making me feel like I have to be hyper vigilant all the time about protecting myself and, like, you know, worry about the wolves like lurking around every corner. And that is not the kind of, like, life of fear I'm interested in. But let's see what else we got here. If you aren't, you aren't competent with regard to the realities of life. Yeah, of course, like, you don't want to be, like, naive and know nothing and just, like, dilly-dally around life. But yeah, just, like, don't go into that survival mode all the time in your head, because you're going to go, like, crazy. But suffering is also a discipline for growth in wisdom. Absolutely. Yes, suffering teaches you a lot of lessons about life. You know, like, if life is good, what lessons are you learning? If life is bad and then you overcome it, you got a lot to learn, you know? It can drive you toward God into greater love and strength, or away from Him into hardness of heart. Given that suffering is inevitable and it's going to make you either wiser or more foolish, what should you do? You should accept your trouble as means for spiritual growth and part of the plan of our loving Heavenly Father. Yeah, this is, like, all perspective. It's about how we think about the troubles that we're going to face. It's kind of like maximizing the pain and the horrible things that are going to happen in life. Like, when you go through tough times, instead of every single time just, like, taking on this woe is me mentality and going into your little hole and staying there until everything is over, we could, like, face our suffering head on with a lot more, like, confidence and courage and say, God's got my back and I'm gonna get through it. And this is going to teach me a lesson. And this could be like a form of discipline on God's end to teach me something greater about life or refine my character, something like that. It feels, yeah, completely perspectival to me. It says, if you can do nothing else, you can always glorify God by having a trusting attitude toward Him as you suffer, rather than becoming bitter. And I absolutely love that line, because it speaks to the reality that sometimes when we're going through hardships, some things are just so out of control and we feel, what, completely helpless and vulnerable in situations like that. And you're like, okay, like, I can't even do anything. Like, how can I honor God in this situation? Although honestly, like, honoring God when you're really going through something tough is the last thing on your mind. But let's say that, like, you're spiritually woke and you're like, yeah, even though I'm suffering, I'm gonna try to glorify God. And how do I do that? Simply by having this attitude. And it is the attitude of trusting Him that He's going to teach you something, and something good is going to come out of it, right? God is not going to ever waste your pain. God is going to always make you a better person when you come out on the other side. It is so easy for bitterness and resentment to, you know, like, fester in our hearts and project that, like, projectile vomit that onto God when we're emotionally, financially, and whatever ways burdened. But then, like, just remind yourself, like, God is not the one causing your problems, you know? God is perfect. He does not cause problems. The people causing problems are yourself and other people in your life. Like, we're the only sinners that exist. Oh, and don't forget about the devil, you know, like, he plays his part too in, like, messing up our world. And, like, he's the one, like, actually putting problems on earth by going into people's hearts and putting up all these temptations and distractions from God and blah, 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 blah. And the best way to do that is to look at God, the Son, suffering infinitely for you. That will help you trust in Him as you suffer. Are you ready for the adversity? I mean, No, I'm not ready for the adversity, but maybe I am because I have this knowledge about how God uses my pain and my painful experience to teach me things. But do I want it? Absolutely not. I would like to share one story. So, you know, when I was little, I'm going to track back to like fourth grade when I was living in Ohio at the time. And at that point in my life, I remember being surrounded by a lot of like catty girls, and they were my friends. Like cliques were such a big thing, and I was absolutely part of that crew. And you know, it was a hard year in my life because I was going through some like racism from some kids at school. But once that started to die down and I started to like fit in to the mold a little bit, you know, because like for context, Ohio does not have Asians, at least the area in Ohio where I was living in the Northwest area. Like it was just like not even diverse. Everybody was like white or black. And then there's me, and they're like, they all looked at me like, oh my gosh, what is she, right? But, you know, the racism like eventually died down a little bit, and I was starting to like, you know, mingle with the other girls in my grade. And we were like all so, oh, like this was a completely learned behavior because naturally I was not this person. But then like the girls in my class who I would spend a lot of time with would be so obsessed with like including people, leaving people, ditching people. You know, it's just like the little girl drama. It started so young. But I remember like I got sucked in. So I remember like my like three classmates, and I would make a list of all the girls in our class and our other class, and we would make them into columns of like yes, maybe, or no. And basically for every person, we would write a check mark for yes, we like her, no, we don't like her, maybe we like her. It's like the stupidest thing. But we used to like go down the line, share our results with each other in these like mini notepad that we carried around in our purses, because like literally who's carrying around purses in school? But we were. And yeah, we would just be like nasty. Like there was this one girl that I was fighting with. She was like a grade above me, and she rode on the same bus as one of my classmates. And so, oh my gosh, I remember like I told this friend of mine to tell this girl, we'll call her Brittany. And I remember telling this classmate of mine, we'll call her Hannah. I was like, Hannah, after school, can you get on the bus and tell Brittany that I don't like her? And then, of course, Hannah dutifully carries out my favor. And so, yeah, she delivered exactly that. And like, you know, I used to do stuff like that. Again, I was not that kind of a person as a child. But then, you know what? I am like blaming my surroundings. Like a lot of girls were like that. And I found it very appealing. I found it very empowering for my identity to like kind of put people below me and treat them in a certain way, you know, because that's what like insecure people do. I don't think I was like super, super insecure at the time, but maybe I was. Reflecting on this behavior, it only makes sense. And especially like, you know, the whole like identity crisis I was having, like being an immigrant to that country only like a year in. So, you know, maybe this all ties in together and there's a reason. But yeah, that's kind of like how I used to socially operate in school. And like, we used to have lockers in our classrooms, not outside in the hallways. So every locker can fit like four people. And like, my friends and I would get like really picky about like who we're gonna include in our locker. And then if we wanted to kick a girl out, we'd be like, we would all go up to her and be like, Jessica, we are kicked out of our locker. We're going to bring someone else. Like that kind of behavior, you know, obviously unkind. It doesn't matter that that was happening in fourth grade, because you might feel like, oh, that's just like a childhood behavior. It's fine. But you know what happens, right? Like those girls who never learn to exit that phase in their lives, they become 40-year-old moms, and you see them like doing the same kind of ish in the supermarket and with their coworkers. Like they don't grow out of it, you know, they continue to manifest behaviors like that, like even into like their 60s and 70s, you know, like because they're children in adult bodies. And you know, this is where like God, I believe stepped into my life. Like, I really believe that God did not want me to grow up with that kind of, you know, like, disregard and disrespect for other people, unkindness toward other people. So guess what happens? Like, not too long after, when I moved to New Jersey from Ohio, I went through like several years of friendship struggles. And I was the one left out. I was the one being talked down to. And I know, like, I've shared a lot of my childhood trauma stories regarding this particular topic in the past. Well, here's another side of it. I do believe, like, God might have honestly allowed those experiences to happen, allowed me to experience like the pains of being rejected, being left out, and all these terrible things, because even though like that was painful and God was so aware of that, he knew that my character would be refined by me being able to actually experience what it feels like to be a victim in that kind of a social situation. And now, like, I am as mindful as I can be in social context to like make people feel included. You know, I'm not always like the hype woman, like gathering everybody and like matching everybody and like making everybody become friends. Like, you know, my other friends are much better at doing than that I am, but at least I'm not the person that I was before, you know, because like, I think from God's perspective, not that I, you know, wish to like put words in God's mouth or like pretend I know how God is thinking X, Y, Z, but like, yeah, like, I guess with my knowledge of God, I bet God's perspective was like, I love Sarah. Like, I see how she's carrying herself, you know, in her, you know, as an 11-year-old. And if she does not know what it's like to be on the other side, then she's not going to be a loving representation of Jesus in the future. And so I feel like God may have allowed me to go through years of like suffering, being bullied and being left out of my friends' groups and all that, like, to come out on the other side, like, not only more emotionally resilient, but also a better representation of Christ, as I am heck of a lot more sensitive than I ever was before when it comes to how people feel in social situations. So, you know, that could have absolutely been like God's discipline for me. And as much as I resented God at certain moments in life when I was like, God, you know, you could have stopped this pain, like, you know, this bullying and whatever, like, did it have to go, you know, on for like X number of years? Like, did it couldn't have been shorter? You know, I did have those thoughts, but then at the same time, I trust that God allowed me to go through what I did for the exact amount of time that I did, because maybe that's exactly the amount of time I needed in order for me to effectively reflect on my past behavior and tease out a lesson that's now going to carry me for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? So I encourage you guys to kind of like look into your own lives. What are some areas where God has, you know, is disciplining you? Like, even though it might be hard, even though you might be hating God for it at the moment, like, maybe he's really looking out for you. You know, give that a thought. And, you know, in the present moment of suffering, it is never easy to think in this kind of a way, but your future self, you know, your better refined future self will think otherwise. So yeah, like, feel free to share with me if you guys have any stories like that. So the prayer for today is, Lord, when things are going wrong for me, the last thing I want to do are to pray and trust you. Yet I've come to see that if I just cling to you in prayer during the stormy times, I'm spiritually stronger, not weaker for it. Please remind me of what I'm saying today when the next time comes. Amen. All right, you guys. I think that's a wonderful prayer. I would encourage you to reread that prayer. I mean, you can if you don't have a copy, but hey, this is why you should get a copy or re-listen, whatever. Like, I would repeat this prayer a few times until it truly resonates with you in your heart. And yeah, like, have that moment with God. I will check in with you guys again tomorrow for our Friday Devo. I guess we're going to be touching upon the topic of justice, so we'll see what that's about. It could become controversial, it might not, we'll see. So you know, until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday and have a beautiful day. Bye.